Welcome to WGOM Radio. This is your host, Mags. Today on the pod, we are talking about the Timberwolves and the NBA in general. My guests today are DK, Cheap Toy, Buffalo, and SBG. Sit back, relax, and enjoy. All right, welcome to episode 2 of WGOM Radio. This is your host, Mags. Today we're talking about the Timberwolves. My guests today are DK.
Hey.
The Hitman himself, first time, long time.
How you doing?
Cheap Toy.
Hey.
And boss himself, SBG.
How's it going?
So the Timberwolves, after last night's win, are one game under 500, about 20 games into the season or so. Is this, you know, what do you all contribute to the success thus far?
Rick Adelman.
Ricky Rubio. Yeah.
I think you have to say it's obviously Kevin Love and those other two guys. But I think it's hard to understate overstate the importance of Adelman. He's just, you know, understands what he needs out of NBA players, who to play and when to play him.
I had a discussion with a San Antonio Spurs fan at work today, and you know, he's always had, you know, since he's his fandom, a pretty good coach there for a little while, and just talking to him about the differences and what, you know, watching a Kurt Rambis team that needed a player like Beasley to, you know, take contested jumpers because we were running our offense through Darko and Beasley. And just the improvement of a coach who knows how to run the offense through Kevin Love with Ricky Rubio. It's just, it's simple things like that that a good coach makes the difference. And, you know, Rubio's the only real new player that we have. And to go from a record that we have last year, I was reading something today, the T-Wolves Pythagorean record, if you spread it over an 82-game season, would be 45 wins right now. That's not just Ricky Rubio. You know, Rick Adelman's a huge part of that and can't be understated.
Well, you know, I looked up their simple rating system today, and they're at 2.70, which would be their third highest in the history of the franchise. These are heady times, and I really think they are a, you know, the way they're playing right now, they are absolutely 35-win team in a 66-game series season.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking I'd be satisfied with reaching the number of wins they got last year in a short season before this season started, but now I won't be satisfied with that at all.
Well, they've reached the number of road wins they had in each of the last
right.
two seasons.
Yeah.
I mean, right now you're two spots out of the eighth seed, or two games out of the eighth seed. You know, there's, and I'm sure we'll get into this later as to the whole Western Conference picture, but I don't think it's unrealistic to see the playoffs in the Wolves' future.
Absolutely.
It'd be so much nicer if they were in the Eastern Conference, though.
Well, if only for travel. I mean, that, you know, the Wolves travel more than any other team in the NBA. They have the most difficult travel schedule of any team in the NBA, and they always have. So that, you know, just for proximity to other teams, would, you know, being in the Eastern Conference would be much preferable. I mean, Portland is in their division, and that's tough.
Yeah. Now let me ask you guys, with Adelman, what do you think the biggest contribution he's made to the team is this season?
I'd say it's the end of the pick and roll moratorium. You know what? To actually play the most basic play in basketball and play it over and over and over again. That's the biggest difference. Or
absolutely.
One of the biggest.
If we can continue to use Beasley as a sixth man, that just opens up so many options for the Wolves. Beasley doesn't hurt you coming off the bench, where if his shot's cold, you know what? No problem. You put him back on there when you're determined to play him starter's minutes. It really hurts the team, and I think Adelman did a really nice job of keeping Beasley on the bench for a week longer than he needed to, DNPing him over and over again to show him, look, this is the game we play now. And maybe it's starting to work.
Or maybe he really is just high now on the court.
Well, no, maybe he's sober.
It's not out of the question, is it?
No.
Go ahead.
I really think that you know, you can live with his gunning when he's on the second team. I mean, you know, a lot of times when you have your second team on the floor, what's the one thing you're really missing? And that's scoring. You know, and if he gets hot, you know, he can carry that second team until, you know, Love and Rubio are ready to come back and actually, you know, run an offense.
Are you trying to tell me that Anthony Tolliver is not a pure scorer? Come on. I'm joking.
I don't know if Tolliver's a pure anything.
Well,
I'll tell you what, when he's
he seems like a pure good guy.
When he's your ninth guy on the bench,
Right.
I'll take that over most ninth guys.
For sure, yeah.
You know, he showed a lot of ability to score last year, or at least hit jumpers, and this year it's not there. But you know, I don't mind him. And I'll tell you, you know, there was a lot of hand-wringing at a certain site after they lost to the Lakers. But you know who they really missed in that game? They missed
Anthony Tolliver?
No, it was Darko Milicic. I think if and I'm not kidding. I think if Darko would have played in that game, they probably would have won it, even with the putrid shooting that they had. I mean, they, if they could have had him body up on Bynum, you know, that would have been the difference.
Well, I didn't know why they didn't go back to Pekovic in the fourth quarter.
Well, I think that's a nice segue to the next topic here, Mags. If you want to jump in to the aforementioned player.
All right. Well, since I am moderating this, I guess I should say something once in a while. that brings us nicely to Peck, who I knew nothing about before the season started. That's really not to say much. I don't follow basketball all that much. But where did he come from? What's his story? And why do you guys like him so much?
Well, he came from the sea, for starters. Destroying opposing centers.
He's Serbian,
the biggest concern for the Wolves, in my opinion.
Falcons, right?
He's an Eastern European, absolutely. Right. When it comes to the Wolves, I think their hardest matchup in the past has been teams that can go really big. Teams like the Lakers, that can just kill you with size. And with Petrovic, Darko, Randolph, while he's not a big guy, that still fouls to give. And in the future, when you have those three bigs, Tolliver doesn't play inside the paint, but he still can get in there and take fouls. You know, that gives us a better matchup against teams like the Lakers, whatever superpower ends up with Dwight Howard moving forward. When you have capable big men who don't just eat fouls but can actually score, like Peck, who can, get the offensive rebounds, it makes a huge difference. And I think it, as much as anything, the emergence of Peck and just having depth on the front line, can really contribute to the Wolves making, going deeper into games.
And as far as where he came from, it's kind of an interesting deal. He was, the Wolves traded. He's a second round draft pick of the Wolves, and the year that he was drafted, there were a lot of people that thought that he might be a first round draft pick, but he fell to the second round. And I posted the other day about the path that or where his draft pick came from, and it actually was a Miami Heat draft pick, was involved in the Antoine Walker deal that went to the Celtics. And then he actually is part of the Wally Szczerbiak trade. So when we got a lot of flotsam in that trade, if you remember Ricky Davis and Mark Blunt, but that pick came in that deal too. And it was the year that Miami cratered out after they won the title, and they only won 15 games, and so that was the first pick in the second round, which is just about, it's one of the most valuable picks in the draft, is the first pick in the second round, because it's not a guaranteed contract. And so you know a lot of guys, I mean, you're seeing it more and more now, second round picks, you pick somebody from outside the United States and you hold their rights forever. And that's what they did. They picked him first pick in the second round, held him, that was a McHale pick, by the way. And they held on to his rights for a couple of years. And then finally, Khan was able to get him over here.
Now, let me ask you, Stick, or obviously anyone else here as well. I'll admit that I just started following the Wolves probably the past couple of years. I've always considered myself an NBA fan, but more of a fan of the game than the team. And becoming part of the WGOM, it was easy for me to... It was a natural progression to move into the Wolves, and it might have had something to do with Ricky Rubio from a couple of years ago. McHale's GM, I know that I believe it was Forbes who said he was the best GM in professional sports, but how would you stack up his tenure against Kevin McHale's, or pardon me, David Kahn's?
Well, I don't know. It's hard to really you got to give him some points. I mean, he was willing to draft Kevin Garnett when that was a big question mark. He stuck his neck out and drafted Garnett, and he put Marbury next to him, and he had he got rid of Danielle Marshall and brought in Gugliotta. So he his first couple years with the team, he really was in fact building a pretty darn good nucleus. But it got blown up in the Marbury deal, and then the Joe Smith deal you know, put them kind of behind the eight ball. And so they, you know, I think he kind of panicked when he had Garnett in his prime, and he tried to put people around him, and it got worse and worse and worse. And finally, you know, actually, you know, he started, you know, the obviously the worst thing he ever did was the Cassell trade. And, you know, for yardage, Cassell in the number one for yardage, that's the low point there. But, you know, even after, you know, and the Garnett trade didn't pan out like you would have hoped it would have, but he did in fact, you know, start laying the groundwork for a rebuilding. You know, he brought in Kevin Love and was able to get, you know, Memphis to choke on Yarich's contract, you know, and he did draft Pekovic, you know. So, I mean, I think he really, you know, it wasn't great, but it wasn't quite as bad as everybody would say it was. I don't
know. Yeah, but, you know, in my mind, the whole Joe Smith thing, he's trying to lay the groundwork for rebuilding, but he's trying to destroy at the same time by basically cheating and doing an under-table deal, and that kind of puts too much of a cloud over everything else he did. In my mind, you know, I've been away from Minnesota for a while. Maybe the coverage of it down here that I can get is not as thorough as it needed to be, but it's just, I have such a bad taste in my mouth from that whole incident and all. And David Stern's kind of a, you know, kind of a jackass for taking so many picks away, but had to hurt more than anything he did that was good. Now,
is Mattel guiltier than any other GM in a similar situation? You see it with Dwight Howard in Orlando now. You saw it with LeBron in Cleveland. When you try to surround a superstar with, you know, you're so concerned about appeasing them and doing whatever it takes to make them stay, bringing in Marberry's. I don't know if Gugliotta is really a draw for primetime players, but it seems that every GM in the game does things like that, and they're just willing to bring on bigger contracts to appease superstars. And I think that Mikhail's tenure might be unfairly tinted due to, and again, you know, I'm not saying that I prefer him as the GM at this point, but over time, it's looks like Mikhail kind of did an okay job.
Yeah, I think it was time for him to go. I mean, I think they needed to have somebody else because the water was so poisoned there, I think. But, you know, and I don't really lay that Joe Smith deal on his, you know, at his feet. I mean, the owner has to know what the rules are, too. And I got to believe that, in my mind, Glenn Taylor was just as guilty there as Mikhail was.
In my experience, you've got a general manager, basically a general manager role in any place, didn't know those things, so the owner doesn't have to worry about it. And I, you know, maybe it works differently in sports. You know, Clint Taylor's not necessarily a basketball guy. He just happens to own a basketball team. He's got people in place below him that should know, are supposed to know these things, are supposed to take care of this thing. And I'm really fairly trashing up McHale. That was a pretty dark time that he was largely responsible for, and that pushed people like me away from, almost away from the sport entirely. I mean, unfortunately, we got a guy like Rubio to, you know, bring all of this back.
Turns out that Glenn Taylor owned the Minnesota Lynx before the Timberwolves, according to his Wikipedia page. That's interesting.
Yeah, that's not true.
Okay. All right, Meg, what do we got next?
The boss brought this up, drafting overseas players and sitting on them. So that brings us nicely to Ricky Rubio, who seems to have energized the fan base around Minnesota. Was the draft pick, and what did we sit on him? The Wolves sit on for 2 years while he was still in Spain?
Correct.
Yep. Was that, in hindsight, was it worth the wait? Are we excited that Ricky Rubio was drafted in and is now a Timberwolf?
Absolutely. There's no question in my mind it was worth the wait, and maybe it's even better for it, sitting over there and not dealing with as much with the lockout stuff and all the, you know, I'm sure there was some lead up to it, to the lockout and all that kind of talk that had to be distracting for some players that, you know, maybe he doesn't want to have to deal with, and he's sitting over in Spain doing what he does, getting a little more experience. I think that was a great move.
I think it was really good that he missed the Kurt Rambis era.
Also, yeah.
I couldn't agree more.
I think there's about how many players in the NBA that would have been better missing the Kurt Rambis era.
Well, I mean, it's arguable that Rambis ruined Johnny Flynn, right? I mean, maybe Johnny Flynn couldn't play in the NBA at all.
Johnny Flynn ruined Johnny Flynn.
Yeah, it could be, but what did Johnny Flynn do? He was a pick and roll guy.
How many minutes did he get last night?
I think it was a zero.
I believe that's correct. That's a whole other issue, and we can put that, you know, in con. As much as I'd love a Steph Curry Rubio backcourt right now, but with Rubio, it's, you know, there was, like I said, I guess putting it on tape now, I might as well admit to it since the old site doesn't exist. You know, I did say I would move to Minnesota if the Wolves drafted Ricky Rubio, and Stick has consistently offered me a basement apartment for him.
Was that done on myself and
family? No, that was done on GOM. Every year my friends and I, we go to a local bar and we watch the NBA draft. And what we do is we all bring a wad of singles, and we bet $1 on who we think is going to get picked each round pick and moves on. And I remember posting on the board that if the Wolves draft Rubio, I will move to Minnesota and, you know, go to all the games. You know, life kind of got in the way, getting married, having babies, stuff like that. The least I can do is I have the league pass. I spend my money to watch the games on TV, and Miss Buffalo gets very irritated that instead of watching the Real Housewives of Orange County, we have to watch the Minnesota Timberwolves. But, you know, it's outstanding. Ricky Rubio is no one. And as someone who's wearing a Ricky Rubio jersey from China that has slight defections, you know, no one's a bigger Ricky Rubio fan than me. No one expected him to do what he's doing right now. No one. And something we touched on. No, we didn't. No one expected him to do this.
Yeah, Khan totally saw this coming.
And I think my favorite play, and sorry to go on for too long here, but my favorite play from the Rubio area right now was last night. I'm not sure I believe it was Kevin Martin. It was in the first quarter, had a full head of steam. Rubio was two steps behind. And again, if it's not Martin, I apologize. But gets in front of the gentleman with the ball. And as he leans in to draw contact as he goes for the layup, Rubio takes steps away and lets the guy fall down. Ricky Rubio's defense and just court vision and knowledge of the game, knowing not only what his teammates are doing, but players on the other team are doing. I don't know the last time I saw a player who plays like this. It's so exciting to have a player like him doing what he does. It's must-watch television every time he plays.
To quantify a little bit, I think he's like, if he's not the leader, at one time at least, he was leading the league in charges taken. You know, he's right. If he's not the leader now, he's right there. You know, and he's one of the league leaders in steals. His assist to turnover ratio is 11th in the league. You think he turns the ball over a lot, but his assist to turnover ratio is 11th in the league, and he's third in the league in assists. I mean, and he's 21 years old.
And at the rate he's going, he might overtake Tim Tebow's ESPN's most popular.
Yeah, I think the book on him coming to the league was that he wasn't going to be either strong enough or, you know, laterally quick enough to be a positive defensive player. But I think he's showing that he has the intangibles and he has the abilities. I mean, I don't like to talk about intangibles in any context, but I think he has the awareness to make up for his physical supposed lackings in those areas.
Ricky Rubio is an inch taller than me. And actually, I'm going to check out the weight here. Let's see if we'll have that listed on the player page. 180. So I've got about 25, 30 pounds on him. But, you know, he shouldn't be able to defend like this against bigger, stronger players. And I would be fine with him guarding a two guard. I'd almost prefer it over when you match him up against guys like Rose who will have that are so fast that no one can defend him. I think you can put Rubio on most two guards in the league and he can hold his own.
Well, how about a situation like last night where you have Rubio and Ridenour on the court at the same time, and one of them's got to be on Lowry and the other one's got to be on Martin. Which one would you want on which guy?
I'd honestly rather have Rubio on Martin.
I think I would too.
I'm at the point where I'd almost rather have Ridenour on the bench for the four guys on the court and be better defense.
Yeah.
I know we'd have Ridenour a hard time.
And I think Rubio, I'm the most guilty of that.
Well, Rubio playing the same position doesn't help. No. He's not making things easier for Ridenour. But
in Ridenour's defense, I was giving him a hard time before Rubio.
No, I know, and Rubio doesn't help things. But as Stitch has said, if Ridenour was 3 or 4 inches taller, he'd be an above-average two-guard. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think I believe that. He's not a bad player, and again, if that keeps players like Wes Johnson off the court, I'd rather have Ridenour.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, yeah, he's I mean, he is what he is. I mean, he's cheap. He's under $4 million a year, and he can score the basketball. But he's a little bit of a ball stopper, and you know, that just drives you crazy, you know, when your point guard stops the ball. But, you know, if Rubio's handing the ball and he's taking a few shots here and there, you know, he's serviceable.
So Rinar is basically a player with decent skills that has really bad ideas because of his position.
Yeah.
I can live with that assessment.
As long as we're not expecting the world out of Ridnour, if what's great about having Ridnour and Rubio on the court at the same time is it takes away the Beasleyification of the team. It creates shots. It has vision. It's making good passes. And while Ridnour is a ball stopper, he's not a ball stopper like Beasley. These guys have open looks. They're going to feed the ball to Love. They're going to feed the – I mean, Ridnour and Petrovic are all of a sudden best friends with their peck and roll, and I'm okay with that there. It's – having two point guards on the floor, it's not a bad thing, especially if it's – you know, if Ridnour is the biggest ball stopper on the floor, I'm okay with that. Because he makes – you know, Stick, do you have his page open, Ridnour?
Yeah.
All right, what is his shooting percentage this season?
He's shooting about 47%. He's right about where he was last year, but his true shooting percentage is 56%, 55.9, which is above average. You know, that's pretty darn good.
Decent. If that's your ball stopper, I'm okay with it.
I was interested in who you, past or present, would compare Rubio's playing style to. Have we seen anybody like this before?
You know, I might be the baby of the group here at 28, so it might not tint quite, things a little. Okay, I think I might have managed by a little bit, but I don't know where DK falls in.
27.
And all right, so we're all.
I was going to say I'm hesitant.
Is Nash
to talk about historical because I'm not sure I can.
Is Nash the right answer?
You know, I don't think he is because Nash is such a great shooter. He certainly you know when he in terms of passing the ball. I think he's everything that Nash is, or he can at least have a chance to be everything that Nash is. He's a better defender than Nash. You know, I think if I would pick anybody in the NBA right now, I would say Rondo is the closest guy to him, except I think he's got a higher ceiling than Rondo does. But you know, Rondo is kind of not a good shooter. He's also terrible at the free throw line, and Rubio's better than him there. But he's a tremendous passer, and he's a plus defender. I mean, that's who I think of as Rondo.
You know, I know historically you want to put in players like, you know, Pistol Pete's the one who gets the most comparisons, right. And while I've watched a documentary or two, it seems like Pistol Pete was quite the shooter and not the defender. I think Rondo is a fair comparison because he's a defensive player and does well there. But what is? I mean, I don't know that I've ever seen a player like this.
Well, I think he's pretty unique. You know, Maravich averaged almost 45 points a game in college. I don't think that's a really good comparison.
Yeah,
I really think Rondo is the guy, and you know, I think Rubio is a better. I think Rubio will be a better player than Rondo. I think he's got a better attitude than Rondo does. I just think he's defensively, I think Rondo's a little better than him. But passing, I don't think there's a better passer in the league right now than him. He needs to clean up a few.
And Rondo?
Sloppy,
Rondo
no,
or Rubio?
Rubio. I think he's the best passer in the NBA. You know, he needs to clean up a few. He makes a few silly plays. You know, a few too fancy plays. But in terms of finding guys that are open, it's just not. You know, I don't think I've never seen anything like it.
I agree. Taking a look at Rondo's kind of rookie stats, they compare honestly almost other than 3-point field goal percentage. We're gonna give to Rondo. But at 3-point percentage and free throws, Rubio's gonna take over from their rookie seasons. I think Stick's right. I think Rondo's a fair comparison for coming into the game with better court vision, a little better shooting, and you know if Rubio turns into evolutionary Rondo, I'm on board with that.
Moving on, the big news out of Minnesota lately was Kevin Love's extension. The numbers I have here is 4 years and between 60 and 62 million. Has that been nailed down exactly yet?
That's about what it is.
Anyway, thoughts on the contracts?
if the team is winning in 3 years, when he has the opportunity to opt out, he would be viewed in a way not flattering towards his career if he left Minnesota that has a winner. So it comes down to, and I kind of wrote either a really long LTE or a post about this, I don't remember, about how the Wolves need to, and since Love has signed his extension at this point, it might not be quite as pressing, but it's David Kahn's job to build a winner now to make sure that Kevin Love stays long term. The Wolves have him for 3 years. If the Wolves are winning 50 games a year, there's no reason that Kevin Love would leave. And if he does, you know what? There's nothing he could have done to make him stay. So I think that I'm 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, I don't really care. It's up to the Wolves to build a winner, and if they're winning and he leaves, so be it. And maybe that's a wrong way of thinking about it, but I think that we're going to enjoy the heck out of 3 years, and as long as there's a winner here, he'll stay.
Yeah, I don't think it's that big of a deal. I mean, it's certainly not as bad as what we're hearing in the national media, but you know, there's a meme out there. You got to beat up on David Kahn, and this is all Taylor anyways, I think. But let's say that the Wolves had signed him to a 5-year deal, and they weren't winning. I mean, what do you think would happen if they stunk after 3 years anyways? I mean, he'd be rumbling to be traded. I mean, I think like Buffalo said, you know, if the Timberwolves are a winning team, he'll stay. And if they're not, he's going to go. And that's, you know, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, it doesn't make a difference.
And, you know, right now I'd argue that with Kevin Love and Stiff, you know, I know you're real up to date on the stats here, but Kevin Love is far better than last season. It's not earth shattering better than last season. Is that fair to say? You know, he has a natural progression with maturing as a player.
Yeah. I don't think he's different than he was last year. You know, it's hard to tell if some of his numbers are a little down. He's not rebounding like he did last year, but then again, you know, he's not required to get every rebound like he did last year.
Right.
He certainly is shooting the three ball a lot better, and he's shooting it with such a high frequency. It's amazing. But you know, I don't think he's miles ahead of where he was last year. I think he's about the same.
And the way I look at it is the Wolves lost 60 games with Kevin Love. They can lose 60 games without him. It's Adelman and Rubio. You know, Love is, and what he's doing is, you know, he's a top 10 player in the league, no question about it. But he needs players around him to make him a top 10 player in the league. And right now, Minnesota has surrounded him with a coach and a point guard who can make him that top 10 player. So hopefully he's smart enough to keep himself in the system where he can flourish. Then again, you know, the Lakers, he could probably flourish there too.
Maybe not with Mike Brown.
Probably not.
He's not going to be there in 3 years anyways.
Right, yeah.
So we had mentioned earlier that the playoffs are not out of the question for the Wolves as a sneaking in at the 8th seed. What, if any, moves would you like to see the Wolves make down the stretch for that playoff push? I would say Buffalo being the trade machine guy. Start with you.
Get a shooting guard. So there's a couple options that the Wolves can look at. Obviously, they need a wing player. You know, I think we can all agree if there was one thing on the wish list of Wolves fans, it's a wing player. And I've kind of taken a look at a couple of options here. Wanted to get a kind of a feel for everyone. Now, I think the perfect match for the Wolves, it won't happen, but I'd love to have Rudy Fernandez on this team. You know, his background with Rubio, knowing the game, his contract is expiring, the Nuggets might try to get value for him. If you could move a guy like, I don't know, say Randolph for him, that's kind of that high value guy, that lottery, that scratch off ticket for a guy like Fernandez who might be talked into staying, I could not be happier with that. More realistic options. And, you know, I think I'm probably gonna get told this is an awful, awful idea. But Orlando's gonna be cleaning house soon. Is JJ Redick a terrible idea for a two guard? I know his contract isn't flattering, but the Wolves have cap space. Those are two players I'm kind of looking at right now that I think could improve the Wolves immediately. A spot-up shooter, and I just really like Rudy Fernandez, and I'd love him to come to Minnesota.
Well, you know, if the Grizzlies go south, we could probably get O.J. Mayo back, and satisfy my for love, right? Yeah, because I absolutely hated that trade that when it was made, because I thought, well, we've just drafted a guy that, or traded for a guy that plays the same position as our best player on the team. I guess that pass was prologue there, but
we did that again.
I think OJ Mayo is, you know, we could have him, and I wouldn't give up too much for him, but he might provide a little improved play on the wing too.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think right now Memphis has a 500 record. I think once Zach Randolph is injured right now, once he gets healthy, I think they'll probably start moving up a little bit. I think the teams in the Western Conference, you're going to look at sliding and maybe starting to give up players, are going to be teams. I can't see Utah continuing the success that they have right now. I'd love to see – I have a serious man crush on Kevin Martin. I think that he would be – I mean, he would be such a great player to bring into the Wolves. He's everything Beasley does, but better. And, you know, he's an efficient scorer who doesn't go, you know, I mean, every shooter takes bad shots, but, you know, I think he'd flourish in this system with a fun point guard. And kind of a dark horse candidate. If you're Sacramento, are you taking offers on Tyreke Evans right now? Would something like Derek Williams for Tyreke Evans work for them?
You know, would they want Derek Williams? I mean, they've got DeMarcus Cousins, and I think Cousins will stay there, and I think he's, you know, that whole situation with Westfall, you know, I put that on Westfall. I think you know, they may not want him, but you know, maybe could talk him into a couple Cousins players.
Cousins is the center, you know. It's a power forward right now. They have JJ Hickson, who's his contract's going to be up when the year is out. Other than that, they don't really – I mean, if you want to play – I think Cousins can play the four or five, either one. And I think Williams is more of a power forward or small forward than a power forward center. So I think the two of them could make a fairly formidable front court. I mean, the guy was the second pick in the draft. So I don't know. I think that Sacramento, with the right package – and I'm not saying Tyreke Evans is necessarily the solution, and he might not like playing the two guard. He might like having the ball in his hands a little bit more. But that's the kind of, you know, it's, I'd love to have a lights out shooter on the team. And that's, I think that's kind of high hope. Perfect fit would be a guy like Tyreke Evans if he would play the two, as an elite player who could build, you could build something with him. I think we could have had him a couple of years ago, correct me if I'm wrong.
No, I think he was drafted before. He was drafted right before.
That right before Rubio. That's right. What's his name?
What's his name? Wes Johnson, right?
Oh, that's right. What do you guys want to do with Wes?
I'd trade him for Tyreke.
Send him to Rapid City.
Is there a spot open in fall?
Well, he's not going to go down to the D League.
No,
they could send him to the D League, but you know, he's, you know, like I would say the one positive about him right now is that he has taken the ball to the basket a little bit more than he used to. But he, you know, he just flat out cannot shoot, you know, and
he takes the ball to the basket, and then when he's going up for a dunk, he instead tosses it to the other team.
Well, I missed that last night.
Is that worse than his jump shooting? I'm not sure that it is, you know, I mean,
it's not better.
Well, yeah, well, but it's not worse.
A bad jump shot gives him a chance at offensive rebound.
Turnover
gives him a chance at looking stupid.
When they turn the ball over, does Rubio a chance to steal the ball?
Right. So it's 6 of 1, half dozen of another. It's no good outcomes. Yeah. I guess, you know, I've read some things about his career in college, and he wasn't that good. He kind of looks like a good player. And the book on him is
his player.
His shot is pretty, but it doesn't go in. You know, and he's not aggressive. I mean, he's a passive player who just is a cipher on the court.
And I think he's like the third oldest player on the Wolves. I might be exaggerating a little bit here. But he came out at what, 24 was his rookie season?
Yeah, he's not, you know,
no, he's 23 his rookie season, I'm sorry.
Is he older than Martell?
Let's take a look here. I can't believe Martell was a top 10 pick. That really caught me off guard. Martell is 25 this year. Wes is 24.
Okay, so that's got to be... There's at least three then that he's, that are older than him.
Oh, Nick Pekovic, Darko, Tolliver, Brad Miller, of course. Brea. There's a lot of players.
I didn't expect to ever see Brad Miller play for the Wolves.
Yeah, I really thought he would be out the entire year. It's he's something, huh?
Well, but you know what? He's an Adelman guy.
Yeah, that's no question about it.
I'm not expecting the world from him. But I think he could function as a nice assistant coach with wearing a jersey every fifth game.
I really like that his basketball reference picture is from 10 years ago.
I always liked Brad Miller when he was with the Pacers. So whatever that's worth.
All right, what do we have next up here, Mags?
I think it's intermission for a refill, right?
Last thoughts on the Wolves, and we'll take a short intermission. Anything else anyone wants off their chest?
Who would have expected that the Wolves podcast was going to go twice as long as the Twins podcast?
Well, for the Twins podcast, they're not in season right now. And Rubio doesn't play shortstop.
I bet Ricky Rubio would stand at shortstop, though. How did you guys like my Beasley Delman Young analogy last night? Pretty spot on, right?
A little questionable.
I really think, yeah, I mean, Beasley, of course, I've been one of his biggest defenders around this place, but they did get him for nothing, you know, and certainly the idea of getting him was a good one. I mean, he fell into their lap. It was a good idea to take a flyer on him.
Right. There is no Matt Garza in this equation.
No, okay. I really think that he has a chance. I still think he has a chance, you know. I guess I'm just hoping that Rick Adelman gives him a little royal jelly.
Now, last year's team needed a player like Beasley, almost despite Rambis. We needed someone to shoot, to not run the offense through Darko. And Beasley was willing to, you know, take that, so we didn't have to just feed Darko over and over again. On this team, with Rubio and Ridenour feeding the ball to Webster, even to West once in a while, obviously Love, Peck. You know, we don't need a guy to shoot up contested jumpers over and over again. Rubio and Ridenour create offense for this team. Beasley's kind of not necessary anymore. Last year, I mean, he was needed. We needed a player like him, but now we're running our offense through Rubio and Love like we should be. And Beasley's kind of a luxury that I'd like to cash in on if at all possible.
That brings us to the end of part one. Stay with us for part two, and we will talk about a little bit about Bill Simmons and the NBA in general. Welcome back to part two of our Timberwolves episode, moving on to the association in general. We'll start with one of the boss's favorite topics, Carmelo and the Knicks. He posted the article today about George Karl. We talked about this a little over the break, but Stick, you want to pick up on that article?
Well, basically the article talks about how, you know, the Nuggets are just so damn glad that he's gone, you know, and they've been able to play team basketball. And one of the things that I think it points out, usually in the NBA, you got to have stars to win. But, you know, I think in this instance, if you have a player like Carmelo, you know, who can get his points, right? But to the detriment of pretty much everybody else on his team, you know, clearing a guy like that out is about the best thing you can do. I mean, and I hate the Knicks with a fiery passion of a thousand suns, and I'm just so glad that he ended up in New York City. I think that's one of the great things about the NBA these days is that, you know, the one guy really, probably more than anybody else, that could torpedo a team ended up in New York City.
I've hated the Knicks since, you know, the Reggie Miller, John Starks days, so I have no problem with them being at the bottom of the league.
But it's, I've hated the Knicks. Isn't it bad for Jeff Van Gundy jumping on Hornets back days?
I was told it was bad for America for them to not be winning.
As the resident New Yorker here, I feel like I should defend the Knicks in some way, but I really am enjoying them failing as well as anyone else. So.
Well, and does Buffalo even count as New York, really?
In the same. Oh, jeez. I have been to more Raptors games than Knicks games. It is a fact.
Do you ever go to any Braves games?
Well, let's see. They moved in 77. I was born in 83, so missed them by just a little bit there. So, but I'll tell you what. I have a wonderful book about the Buffalo Braves. I have a framed Bob McAdoo jersey in the house. It's I love the association. It's no matter what Simmons says, I think there's at least 100 serious fans in the world. And, it's most of us are enjoying the Schadenfreude of seeing the Knicks fail, especially after Carmelo pushed his way there, seeing how Amare and Carmelo don't fit at all, and they're seriously going to pin their hopes for a playoff run on Baron Davis. That's what you're waiting for? Or is Tyson Chandler going to suddenly understand Mike D'Antoni's offense? What are you waiting for here?
Playoff runs
awful roster construction.
What they really need is to have Isaiah come back and fix it. The idea before the season started, they were talking about NBA title, and now they're hoping that Baron Davis can turn it around for them. That's just too good to be true.
Sometimes I have to think, isn't it kind of surprising that Isaiah did not put this roster together?
You know what? I thought he was working behind the scenes to do this. Maybe that's just a rumor.
The Knicks could have waited and got Carmelo in free agency, and that's what Donnie Walsh wanted to do, but James Dolan said no, and I gotta believe that Isaiah Thomas was behind that.
And I thought I had read an article basically where he admitted that, and I could be misremembering here, but I swear I read that somewhere.
Let me ask you guys a question. Let's do an over or closest to the pin here. What's Tyson Chandler make this season?
What's salary?
His salary this season, yeah.
Isn't he about 12 million?
I was going to say 12, yeah.
All right, so he is making 13.1 for the next 4 years. Let's take a look and see what he's putting up this year with the Knicks. In 20 games, he's respectable. 780 from the free throw line. He's got 690 from the floor, and he's averaging how many rebounds a game? 10.2, so that's not bad, but let's be honest, that's not the player you want in D'Antoni's offense. Now, there might be a certain person named Phil Jackson who might be able to work with him a little bit better. We'll see how that works out. But right now, if you're a Knicks fan, you can't be too excited by what's happening.
Well, I don't think we should rag on. I mean, Chandler obviously is not a terribly skilled offensive player, but I do think he was a pretty key component to the team that won the title last season. So
I agree.
I mean, I think a lot of this is falls on Melo's shoulders and the fact that they don't have a point guard, for sure.
Oh, in the same way, I'm not going to make fun of Prince Fielder for signing the contract that he could. If someone's going to offer you that money, you're going to take it.
No, but it won't stop me from making fun of Brewers fans for booing Joe Mauer when he got paid to save the home team when their boy was about to leave. I will never stop being bitter about that.
I'll tell you what, there was my last time in Minneapolis, Cheap Toy, if it makes you feel better, I did some terrible things to Brewers fans at the Hotel Minneapolis. So, some awful things. So hopefully that evens it out for us.
Since I brought up the Reggie Miller Starks earlier, and we mentioned Donnie Walsh, former Pacers president, last year, the Pacers snuck into the playoffs with a .450 winning percentage, 25 games behind the division-leading Bulls. This year, they are winning at a .680 clip. I'm pleasantly pleased with the turnaround. I think I was a little hesitant at the David West signing before the season, but looks like the Indiana's got things on the upswing now, and I'm pretty happy about that. Anybody else have Pacers opinions?
Well, they're gonna get beat tomorrow night.
Yeah, I
agree. Well, why don't we take this opportunity? In the Eastern and Western Conference, what are everyone's biggest surprise in where they are in the East and West? About a third of the way.
Surprise? The Sixers?
Hmm. Yeah, I was gonna say, who do they even have?
Sixers are 15-6, and Iguodala is, you know, certainly an above-average player. He's the kind of player I would love the Wolves to have targeted if the Sixers stunk, but that clearly isn't happening. Jrue Holiday is certainly putting up some numbers this year, and Elton Brand's returning from the dead. We'll see if that continues for them. How about the Western Conference?
Well, the Jazz are doing better than I thought they would. I mean, and I think they'll progress from where they are.
I'm going to agree on both counts. The only other team in the East that I'm really surprised by right now is Atlanta. For some reason, I just, with Al Horford going down, I really thought they were going to take a big, big step back. And they have continued to, you know, I mean, they have the same record as Philadelphia. It's Horford who's, you know, that complementary style player. He's, you really thought a lot of the team, you know, who are their, Zaza Pachulia is their big right now? That shouldn't be a 15-6 record. I'm more surprised by that than anything in the East. As for the West, you know, what's nice is that Minnesota gets a first-round pick if Utah makes the playoffs, so I guess that's all right.
There's that. I don't think there's any other team in the West that's surprised more than our team. You know, the Wolves, I mean, I expected them to be better. I didn't really think they would be 500. And Bill Simmons was selling that story before the season started. He had the Timberwolves winning 30 games in his preseason picks. So I got. Other than that, I think it's pretty. I mean, now that the Clippers have Chris Paul, you know, they're going to be good. The Lakers, I expect, will improve. But other than that, I think the West is kind of according to form.
There's so many good teams in the West. It's really an embarrassment of riches compared to the East. It's Houston has a fair argument. They could be the third best team in the East right now, and they're not even. You know, right now they're tied for the 8th seed.
Since you mentioned him, Stick, moving on to Bill Simmons, Buffalo emailed that he wanted to talk about that. So what in particular, was it the player rankings or something else you said? I wasn't quite sure.
There's all sorts of – it's Bill Simmons, as far as the everyman goes, I think is, you know, someone that we all look to for somewhat for basketball writing as far as an accessible writing that we can at least enjoy to some effect. I think Bill Simmons is a fair job and – this might not be the most popular opinion, but I kind of want to defend Bill Simmons a little bit. What's that?
I said you're right. It's not a popular opinion.
Yeah, it's Go ahead.
I haven't read Bill Simmons in a long time.
Yeah, I'm not a huge Bill Simmons reader either.
Stick, why don't you lay out some issues you have with Mr. Simmons here, and I'd like the opportunity to refute some of them.
Well, you know, I actually probably in agreement with you more than you realize. I mean, I think he was unfair towards David Kahn. I think David Kahn did some things that were a little bit off the wall, but, you know, he's kind of been, you know, he kind of got on him when a little more than what he should have. But, you know, I think he writes some things that are, you know, provocative. I don't know if you saw his column this week where he was talking about the NBA shifting their season from Christmas Day till the end of July. I mean, that's actually not a bad idea. I thought that was a terrific idea. You know, I really like Bill Simmons. I mean, yeah, sometimes he says some things that I don't particularly appreciate, but that doesn't, you know, you don't have to agree with everything he says.
Well,
Well, I
was really looking forward to fighting in his favor here. I thought you had an issue with him.
No, I like him. I like to talk about him. I mean, I think the Boston centric stuff gets a little sickening, you know. Sure. But you know where he is. I mean, he's very clearly laid out his biases. If you know a guy's biases like that, I can accept that. I personally really like the fact that his picture is sitting right above Rick Riley's. You know, he's got a higher billing on the website than Rick Riley. That I get every time I go to the site, I smile at that.
That's the best thing I think I could probably say about him is that he's better than Rick Riley.
I think that as far as NBA goes, it's, you know, I'm an unabashed Free Darko supporter. I think that Bethlehem Schultz does a really, really great job. I think at times earlier in his career, he was unnecessarily wordy and attempted to be somewhat, you know, a little overly pretentious when it came to the writing. But I think now that he's writing for a larger audience, he does a nicer job, especially on his new website, The Classical. I think he does a really, really nice work on NBA writing. But after that, I mean, who is the preeminent NBA writer right now? Hollinger? His writing doesn't exactly generate interest. It's very, I think Hollinger kind of has that Gleeman thing where must read, but it's not, oh, did you see what Gleeman wrote today? Did you see what Hollinger wrote? You know what I mean? It's very, this is matter of fact. This is what it is. And if someone disagrees, feel free to interject. But I mean, while it must read, I think Simmons has strong opinions on the NBA and articulates those better than a lot of writers currently.
I'd like Hollinger, but he's just one piece of the puzzle. The guy I like is David Thorpe. I think he's pretty darn good. You know, he knows a lot about players and player development, and I eat up everything he writes.
I'll definitely keep an eye on him moving forward. Cheap Toy, any NBA writers you really enjoy?
I like, who's the guy that does True Hoop? Abbott.
Yeah?
I don't read a lot of NBA stuff, but I don't think I've read anything bad by him, and most of it seems pretty on the ball and well done. But I do have to say that my NBA knowledge is not what it was 4 or 5 years ago before the it's almost 6 years ago now, the Malice at the Palace. So once the Pacers took a huge nosedive for a couple of years, I kind of, that more than anything really took the shine off of basketball for me. I'm just now getting back into the sport now that the Pacers are back doing decent. Call me fair weather if you will, but that's kind of where I've been with the sport lately.
It's really going to hurt, probably going to lose interest after the Wolves put up, clip another 120 spot tomorrow night.
Yep. Luckily, I'm getting out of the country before that, or after that happened. I don't have to listen to it.
The Pacers were beaten so badly, I decided to leave America.
Yep.
You know, I get back to Abbott. I think Abbott is what he's doing, you know, is kind of an aggregator, you know, and kind of an NBA beat writer for the whole league. And I think he does a good job. I think you look at some of the clowns that the four letter has, Chris Sheridan. I mean, he's just worthless. Is Stephen A. Smith, is he an NBA writer? I don't know if he is or not, but he's a clown too,
regardless of what he writes about.
But you know, I think if you look at a guy like Thorpe or Simmons, and you put Hollinger in your queue, and you know, there are a couple of good writers, and I do read what's his name here from Minneapolis, that Ashburner. I like to read Ashburner.
Zach Harper.
Zach Harper. Yeah, I like him.
He does nice work. I really enjoy him. There's a ton of really huge Wolves fans on Twitter who have a fairly decent following that I really enjoy. M. Brown, Zach Harper does a really nice job. I mean, well, Twitter, it's this season, it's just, I mean, it's almost all Wolves all the time with NBA writers. Are there any NBA guys that on Twitter that you guys are following right now that, you know, you feel are kind of must follows for the Wolves?
I guess. Other than Dad Boner? You know, he hasn't really chimed in on Rubio yet.
Just a matter of time.
Yeah, he'll be there. I follow M. Brown and Harper, too.
Yeah, they both do a nice job. Zach Lowe at SI does a nice job, too. He seems to be a Wolf.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to bring up Zach Lowe when I got a word in edgewise there, but Zach Lowe is probably the one I read the most frequently. I mean, I check most of these other guys out, too. I mean, like True Hoop and Harper and those, but Zach Lowe is probably one of my favorites.
He does a really nice job. The Point Forward blog is outstanding. I definitely suggest that to anyone who hasn't come across that yet.
Moving on with the NBA talk, let's talk a bit about playoffs. It's about a third of the way through the season. We already discussed a little bit that 8 seed is not unreasonable for the Timberwolves. Starting at the bottom, who do you think, not currently, or maybe currently in the 8 spot, but near the bottom of the playoff picture, has the best chance of finishing with a postseason berth in the East and the West?
I'm going to say in the East, New York, and in the West, Minnesota.
I'd sure like to see Cleveland in a first-round matchup with the Miami Heat. Wouldn't that be something?
Sure would. I'm sorry, it's just the East is so bad. Who do you see coming out of there? None of those teams. It's such a...
Yeah, well, I mean, Boston tough. Will be in... Sooner or later, I think. I mean, even the Bucks, even though they're never going to get Bogut back, I mean, they still could stumble in. And then who knows what the I mean, once the Magic start trading everybody, they might fall out. You know, so then you could see somebody who didn't even. I mean, maybe if the Nets get somebody in a trade, maybe they can move up. Or otherwise, the Cavaliers didn't even want to make the playoffs this year anyway. But they could find themselves backing into it against their will. The East is so bad that it's just it's hard to put together even six teams that should be in the playoffs.
Toronto might make it.
Well, you know, it'll be interesting to see if Orlando does. I mean, right now they're pretty safe. You know, they're three games ahead of Cleveland, but it's going to get ugly there, I think, in a hurry.
Right.
Did anyone see any of that Orlando game last night? I know that the doctor and I got into a bit of a disagreement as to Dwight Howard's effort level, but there was an interview that I read today that I think Wojciechowski from Yahoo wrote, and it quoted heavily on J.J. Redick talking about how negatively the Howard situation is affecting the team and how everyone's just falling apart. They need to move Howard now. What he's doing, he's going to get his. That's fine. And he's going to increase, you know, make himself look great. But he's hurting that team more than anything right now. Every town he goes to, I'd play here. He never talks about playing in Orlando. I mean, if you were a teammate of his, how would that make you feel right now? It's a bad situation. It's not going to get any better until they resolve it.
It reminds me of a baseball player a few years ago, actually. I'm trying to – the name is on the tip of my tongue, and I can't quite place it. But,
What is it?
I don't know. I'm just gonna have to,
I for the life of me don't see how I don't see how Dwight Howard's situation is worse than LeBron, better than LeBron's. I think this is I think it's travesty what's going on with him. It's Carmelo all over again. But this is ridiculous. It's terrible. It's bad for the league. It's bad for that team. You know, and he looks like a complete jackass.
I mean, this is worse than Carmelo or LeBron. LeBron didn't say, "I'd like to play in New York. I'd like to play in Miami. I'd like to play in Los Angeles." Carmelo was, "I want to go to New York or the Nets." And even at the Nets, was forced into later in the game. He was very specific the whole way. Every single town Dwight Howard goes to, he wants to play there. He's an embarrassment. This guy is if he reached his ultimate potential, I mean, a top 10 player of all time, in a league that has no centers, he is a legitimate player. He could put up 20-15 every night, and it wouldn't surprise anyone. He has the footwork. He's a smart player in a league where players don't go to college or they go there for 1 year for big men. There's no position that's hurt more through the lack of college than centers. And Dwight Howard has strong footwork compared to everyone else in the game. He works with Hakeem in the summers. He wants to become better. You could argue that relative to his peers, if we were to use a war style or VORP style ranking, Dwight Howard is leaps and bounds above every other center in the league, more than LeBron is over other wing players. Dwight Howard should be dominating this league like no one else, and what he's doing right now for a team that has given up on him, it's too bad. He's a player who should be regarded more highly than he is, and he just doesn't care.
Well, I think your guys' Bill Simmons talk pissed off the trinket, so that's why I was gone. But I'm back now. Nobody
missed anything. Moving up on the playoff ladder, coming out of the East, who do you have in the conference finals?
Heat, Bulls. I mean,
yeah, I don't see there's any other way for that to end.
Yeah, Heat, Bulls.
And out of the West?
Thunder and someone.
Denver. I'd love to see it.
That'd be, yeah.
That's a good shot of that. I'm looking down the list of the West. I don't see too many. Yeah, Thunder, Denver would be pretty fun. It'll probably be the Lakers, though, just to piss us all off.
No, I don't think the Lakers are going to do it.
I don't either.
I could see Dallas getting hot later in the year, but I mean, I'm, with my heart, I really want Thunder Denver.
Well, Dallas only has nowhere to go but up now.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I was going to say OKC, Denver. It's Dirk's spend some time on the bench. It's, you know, if they play the season right, I think either San Antonio or Denver will take the other Western Conference playoffs. If they or Western Conference final spot, you know, they've got the players. If they can rest them and stay healthy, one of those teams should make the Western Conference finals so alongside Oklahoma City.
So then for the championship, what kind of matchup, how many games, and the eventual champion?
Well, I figured Heat Thunder before the season started, and I'm not really going to deviate from that right now. I'm not really sure how many games.
I'd like to see Oklahoma City Chicago. I might have gotten 12-1 odds on the two of them meeting in the finals, and that would please me greatly.
These are theoretical odds from your not at all real gambling account, right?
If I lived in Panama, I'd be in free and clear. I could talk about it all I wanted to.
Just as a sidebar. Gambling is completely legal in the Czech Republic. Make of that
what I would do is, you know, I'd see if you still had odds for Ricky Rubio to win Rookie of the Year at 8-1 on the board.
I don't know. Anyway,
probably not a lot of basketball gambling available in the Czech.
Hockey's big, but they do a little bit of basketball too. But hockey is king over there. So,
DK, you ready for the Wild Sabres trade deadline rumor mill? Whenever in March or what?
You know, ever since the Wild tank last month, I've been so out of touch on what they're doing. I'm still assuming they're going to sell everybody off. I'm sure they're going to sell Zdlicky off to somebody.
I guess the Sabres are going to do that same thing. Anymore.
Yeah.
No, yeah, I mean,
the Wild are really bad.
Back to the finals. Stick, did you weigh in?
No, I didn't. I think it'll be Miami and Oklahoma City. Usually the best two teams come out, and that's who I think they are.
That brings us around to the end. Any last points anybody would like to bring up before we sign off?
During the break, we talked about possible trades that might not come through. I know that, you know, I'm gonna take my share of litch for proposing terrible trades, but I'd love for everyone else here to maybe offer in a trade that they'd like to see the Wolves make before this is over.
Well, I mean, I have ideas of the kind of guys I'd like to see him get. I'm not really well-versed on, I mean, I guess I could go to the trade machine and mess around with it, but I'm not that well-versed on all the CBA intricacies myself, so I hesitate to propose something that would just be impossible. But, I mean, I think their biggest asset by far is Derek Williams, by far. And we've talked about lots of shooting guards that you know, we'd like to see them try to target, and I think that would be the best way to go for them at this point.
And I'm going to fully admit that I'm pretty Wolves-centric in my viewing, and I really don't know much about other players outside, so I got nothing aside from what I can look for in, you know, 4 years from now in NBA 2K11, which is going to get us nowhere in this discussion.
I'm still waiting for the Timberwolves to bring home OJ Mayo.
What do you think the Wolves have to give up to get Mayo?
I'm not sure exactly.
Like Williams?
They have to give love.
they'd have to take back Marco Yarich. I don't know what it would take.
Would it be worth that?
Maybe we could send him Luke Ridenour. Well, we have to probably send more than that. But I don't think we would want to send them Williams for Mayo. I don't think that's a fair trade.
And who's on whose side?
For us, for the Wolves. I think that's too much to give up for Mayo.
I agree.
So Ridenour and West settled then.
There you go.
I feel like West is going to be the Nick Blackburn of trade talks. Just throw him in there for everything.
Why don't you trade West?
If Beasley's going to be Delman, I think Wes is definitely going to be Blackburn.
All right, well,
guys, thank you so much. Madge, thank you so much for having me tonight. Definitely enjoy to talk hoops with you guys.
All right. Yeah. I was going to say, on that note, it brings our latest podcast to a close. I'd like to thank my guests, DK, Buffalo, Cheap Toy, and SBG for joining me tonight. Thank you all for listening, and we will talk to you again soon. WGOM Radio is a production of WGOM.org. Our theme song is titled Bruce Lee by Doran Deutsch. It's used under a Creative Commons license and is available from the Free Music Archive at freemusicarchive.org.